Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. There were hundreds of films released in 2018, but with awards season in full swing, it can be hard to remember any of them that aren't being talked about in terms of the Oscars. Well, thankfully, we have film contributors who can remind us of some of the highlights from the past year, whether they're award-winning or not.
Ryan Jay and Dave Lurson joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio to share their top picks, filmmaking trends, and the increasing competition between television and film. Ryan Jay begins with his observation of the year in film.
I think 2018 was one of the most exciting years. It didn't seem to be the way as we entered it. And even around summertime, you didn't really, the films that were going to become awards-worthy campaign films weren't really on the radar yet. So we didn't know how it was all going to shape up. But even early in the year, there were favorites.
And how about you, Dave?
Well, I thought the year got off to a bit of a slow start with some good releases along the way. I was kind of worrying, in fact, by September, October, okay, where is the big onslaught of Oscar nomination-worthy films? I kind of hoped that the Spike Lee movie would make it, and indeed, it did in the end. That was a summertime release, as I recall. I liked Black Panther a lot early in the year. Disobedience was really good, and that, I believe, was wintertime. So there were some of these good things that came out early in the year. But to me, a long stretch, at least in the multiplexes, of really, really, you know, subpar stuff.
Yeah, it was a bit slow to start. And then, of course, as it usually goes, these past couple months have been the onslaughts of Oscar nomination releases. But before we get into those, I would like to touch upon trends. So one thing I noticed for sure this past year is that Netflix is getting much stronger with releases. And of course, we have the first Netflix-produced film nominated for Best Film Oscar. And we had a few Amazon series and movies being released just outside in a normal theater, not even exclusively for Prime. So do you think that this is going to change the competition from here on out?
It's another factor as far as what gets released into movie theaters around the country. It's also another reason, I'm sorry to say, to stay home and watch great things in the comfort of your living room or your bedroom because, I mean, this is truly a golden age of TV. The golden age of television was not I Love Lucy in 1957 or whatever, and it was fine, whatever. But, I mean, there's never been such an enormous number of really superb television programs, whatever that even means, stuff for the screen. I mean, I think we need to redefine what we're talking about at some point here. But, I mean, there's plenty of stuff to do right at home. This was the year where I finally began accessing Amazon Prime and Netflix. I've been a holdout, a Luddite a little bit in that area. And, well, you know, I've had a great time watching things at home. And up until the last couple of months, I was not having as good of a time consistently in movie theaters.
Right. It says something when you can't even get the three of us to a movie theater consistently.
I think what we're really seeing here is a paradigm shift in the entertainment industry because we are blurring the lines between television and film, and it started with casting. It was HBO luring big, you know, huge Academy Award-winning actors and actresses to the small screen, then networks doing it, and now Netflix and Amazon, and the blurring of the line between streaming and television. There used to be a really high prestige factor and a difference between being an actor who does film or does TV, and it meant something. It doesn't anymore. It is as prestigious to do television, arguably even a viral web episode could be as important to one's career as doing an award-nominated performance on the big screen in a film. So, yes, what's following then is Netflix and Amazon becoming theatrically distributed studios, not just streaming services. And it is huge. It is changing entertainment and arguably the world because the way that influencers are responding and how we're perceiving. The one thing I want to disagree with Dave, though, is I still think it's, especially with big movies like the Netflix-nominated Best Picture Roma, which I did not like, and I don't know anyone else who didn't, so I will take it as the minority member of that opinion. But it's still, I'd argue it's still better on the big screen.
I would agree with you, though, actually, because from an aesthetic standpoint, I love big screens. There are plenty of movies that have been released in the past 20 years or so where it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But a great film even if it's not a great film story-wise, but a great film visually, it really demands to be seen in that kind of format. It is shrunk looking. It's kind of like looking at Picasso's Guernica in an art history book with the image, you know, reduced to some small little thing on the top of a page. Yeah, you see what it looks like, but you're not getting the full picture.
Right, and when you're watching something at home, you're tempted to pause, you're tempted to stop and you finish it on another day, you're tempted to look at your phone, run to the bathroom, stop and make some food. You don't get the community aspect of a theater experience. You don't necessarily get the best surround sound and those sorts of things. So I still argue that, you know, to see a director's real vision, especially if we're looking at an award-worthy type film, it's always better on the big screen.
The Black Panther movie not only was historic in its release in early 2018, but now it's having even a bigger resurgence. You call it a boomerang effect, however you'd like it, but people are still paying attention. People are still talking about it. So what was it about this film? You know, for one, it was a refreshing superhero movie in a market that's oversaturated with them. But to you both, what stood out with Black Panther? That, and do you think that it will hold its momentum that it has going and actually get some awards?
Well, I think it's going to continue the momentum toward African-American filmmaking, toward African-Americans playing a more prominent role in Hollywood. It shows there's an enormous audience for movies that are, it's not an all-black cast movie, but a movie that's largely African-American in casting. One thing that I liked about this movie, in addition to the fact that the complexion of the lead characters, the heroes, was different than it normally would be. But there was a sense of the power of community in this film as opposed to the power of one guy or one woman or some little group of people band together to save the universe. Here you had an entire nation, as it were, working together to fend off their enemy. And I think that there is a lesson that's very important that we might want to take from that.
I think when we're talking about Black Panther, it's important to also recognize a film like Crazy Rich Asians in 2018 and talk about diversity in general and, you know, also gender, you know, more female cinematographers and directors and screenwriters and the effort of actresses primarily like Nicole Kidman, who are taking a stand and saying that they're going to work with every 18 months female directors and other people, you know, making proclamations like that. It's a really important thing for diversity that our art reflects who we are as a world, as an audience, because it's important for us. Whether a story is a good story, anyone can relate to it, but we still want to identify with the characters that we see.
Yeah, and some of the other movies that kind of fall in that purview in particular, we had a lot of quality LGBTQ cinema releases this year. So most notably, Love, Simon was the first kind of popular, widely released film centered around a gay teenager. And then we have Disobedience. Rachel Weisz had two strong films in that and in The Favorite this year. We have Colette, Miseducation of Cameron Post, and Boy Erased, two films about conversion therapy. And Can You Ever Forgive Me, Bohemian Rhapsody, and The Favorite. So with LGBTQ cinema, we have more black filmmakers and actors. We have Crazy Rich Asians. Do you hope that this momentum will continue to carry through? And did you have any special favorites of any that I listed?
Oh, I have favorites among many of the movies you just mentioned. But I think, again, one of the most remarkable turnarounds in my lifetime is the changing attitude towards sexuality. 25 years ago, it would have been very inconceivable to think about what we're talking about right now. And all over the place on television programs, there's more and more of a matter of factness about somebody's sexuality. It's not a major plot point necessarily. The gay man is not necessarily the villain anymore. I mean, it is so different than it was years ago. I mean, a movie like Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, There have been films throughout the history of Hollywood about gay or bisexual stars, and up until pretty recently, this would have been cloaked in some way, encoded perhaps, or ignored entirely. And now, you know, large numbers of people will go out and see this. And
it's made almost $1 billion worldwide now.
Yeah, I don't know, I suppose there's some, you know, fringe group somewhere complaining about it, but basically it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is. I remember when I saw, as a member of the LGBTQ community myself, I remember seeing Love, Simon and thinking about how different my life might have been had I seen that when I was of the age that the characters in that film, because it was such a natural, real, it mirrored all the movies that I did grow up with but couldn't actually identify with because they were all straight characters. So that movie was incredibly powerful to me, as were many of the other films that you mentioned. But we still look at the world then, you know, which were recently the Supreme Court upheld a ban on transgender people in the military. So you know, it's like we sometimes as a world take a couple steps forward and art sometimes leads the way, but then take a couple steps backward. And so we're still all a work in progress. And yeah. I think that includes Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to review what our best films of 2018 were, do you both have a few select favorites? And by all means, if you have any worst films,
yeah,
mention those.
I do. And I'll preface it by saying these are favorites and to assess best. That's, you're getting into cosmic matters of truth here. But I will say that my favorite film of the year was Bohemian Rhapsody. I think it was a historically condensed and simplified, of course. But I very much relate to this movie. I'm a person of that time. I was involved in music. The family situation of Freddie Mercury was very much like my own family. So I personally related to it. I also found it to be extremely entertaining, great music. And it certainly, you know, reached a very large audience.
I am so in the minority this year. My favorite film of the year was probably the worst reviewed film across the board. Welcome to Marwen by Robert Zemeckis. Universal released it starring Steve Carell based on the true story of a man who is attacked. It's like a gay bashing on a man who is not gay. And it's a story I'd never seen told before. And it's also a fantasy. We were looking at trends. Five of my top 10 favorite films of the year in 2018 were fantasy films. The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Christopher Robin, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, Mary Poppins Returns, and Welcome to Marwen. So I love fantasy, and I think there were some great ones in 2018.
And how about documentaries? I think we had some very strong documentaries released this year. In particular, of course, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary about Fred Rogers.
Oh. That's the kind of documentary that while you're watching it, you know it's one of the greatest documentaries ever made. Documentaries don't necessarily make money for the people who make them. They don't necessarily make a lot of box office. It's rare when anyone does become profitable in any way for anyone. They're really labors of love, but they tell great stories, and they, even more so than biopics or other stories that might sweep you into and cause tears or laughter, really can have great impact.
This was a good year, as you say, for documentaries. There are enormous numbers of documentaries being made, and my complaint about many of them is that somebody points a camera at an interesting subject and hopes for the best. They're often not very well made, but there were several this year. Won't You Be My Neighbor is the outstanding one. RBG, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg film, coming in at a close second. I also liked the movie called Yitzhak about the violinist Yitzhak Perlman. I don't even know if it opened in Milwaukee. But that is a very well-made documentary about an extremely interesting person. So the documentary form is alive and well. It's important in a way that we get something that is factual content. It's kind of maybe the fiber of our film going diet, perhaps, in a way. And a film like the Mr. Rogers one was very moving and a symbol of hope, I think, for where we might go as a world.
How about one more top film from each of you?
Well, The Favorite. I find many people don't like that movie. It did get nominated for an Oscar. People go to it thinking it's going to be a comedy. It is funny, but it's not Wedding Crashers. I mean, it's not what people think of as comedy. The Masterpiece Theater crowd would find it to be, it's not quite the Downton Abbey cup of tea kind of thing, even though it crosses over into that. I think it was very ambitious trying to market the film to a mass audience. I hope it finds a larger audience in time. It had a very unique sensibility visually. It tells a very different kind of story within the kind of traditional, you know, British period setting, which I enjoy anyway, but that would be my number two.
I'd have to say Mary Poppins Returns, just because I love musical genre, and it is a kind of musical that we haven't seen in decades. It lacked that realistic edge that many modern movie musicals use to justify their production in the last several decades. So Mary Poppins Returns really, you know, it's a Time Gone By that's been reborn, and Lin-Manuel Miranda brought so much to it. Emily Blunt filling the shoes of Julie Andrews in a way that you could never imagine, you know, being done otherwise. That was just an outstanding film.
Any films that left a bad taste in your mouth?
Peppermint, Mile 22,
ironically,
Sicario, Day of the Soldiers. I don't like soft core violence porn, and all three of those movies fall on the low end of that for me.
You know, I'm such a film cheerleader. It's hard for me to pick, but I'm gonna be controversial here and say Roma, because it is one of the most celebrated films of the year, and I hated it. I think it is beautifully shot. Alfonso Cuarón is one of my favorite directors. I love all of his previous work, but this film I just couldn't have cared less about. I was very bored during it. I felt like my time, it was kind of like it ended, and I was like, oh, there's some time in my life I'll never get back. So that's just me, and you know, I'm not saying I'm right. It's just where I stand with that
Well,
film.
I actually agree with you, though I wouldn't go as far as say I hated it. It wouldn't make the worst film of the year list for me, but I was bored. Yeah. Beautiful to look at, kind of interesting, but not that interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, so good luck on Oscar night with it, but I don't think it's going to make it.
All right. Well, hopefully our listeners and fellow movie viewers maybe agree or disagree with some of these things, but we will certainly chat again next time about Oscar nominations. But for now, thank you both for coming in to talk about
the
best of.
Thank you, too.
Ryan Jay is a nationally syndicated radio host and the resident reviewer for TMJ4's The Morning Blend and Saturday News. Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor for The Shepherd Express. They are both regular Lake Effect contributors, and you can hear more of their film segments with Audrey at WUWM.com.